You're listening to the best of the day.
I said you the best. The best.
Halford and Brough.
Canucks win. Canucks win. They finish off this very, very difficult five-game road swing in good fashion. Wins over the Washington Capitals. And then last night, Thatcher Demko made 31 saves. The Canucks defeated the Preds 3-1 at Bridgestone Arena. Brock Besser, his 10th goal of the year. Elias Pettersson, third goal in two games, as we heard in the intro. Petey's got his swag back, Jason. Petey's got his swag back.
Yeah,
great result for the Canucks last night.
It was. They didn't have Horvat or Garland or Halak, for that matter. But yeah,
emotional support from the bench.
Guy to open the gate.
Yep.
But no Horvat or Garland because of COVID. Preds did have David Rittich in goal, so that was an advantage for the Canucks. It didn't start out all that great for the Canucks. They went 0-for-2 on the power play before Nashville got their first power play. And we've heard this before. The Canucks surrendered a power play goal. The PK continues to be the most glaring problem that they've got, because Elias Pettersson isn't such a glaring problem right now. Mm-hmm. Last two games, he scored goals. After the Preds went up 1-0, Petey tied a few minutes later, putting home a rebound nicely off a Podkolzin deke to the backhand on Rittich, and the puck was finally starting to bounce Petey's way.
Mm-hmm.
It is good to see.
Yeah, that's a big part of what we've been talking about all season.
It is really good to see the puck starting to bounce Pettersson's way. I'm not just saying it's all been bad luck or good luck, but it tends to happen that way.
Well, I think everything snowballed, right? It was, are the hands betraying him? Well, yeah, to a certain degree. Is his timing off? Absolutely. But you also have to add in the caveat, is anything going his way? Is he getting any sort of lucky bounce? And for the longest time, he wasn't. Got some fortunate bounces. Old hockey cliches come to the forefront. You work for your bounces. Eventually, it'll turn around. It has for Pettersson.
Petey was on a line with Podkolzin and Hoglander. And Hoglander actually got called out to a small degree. Well, actually, it was a pretty major degree, actually, by Bruce Boudreau, who essentially said he's got to learn to play the game in the NHL, and that is defensively.
Yep.
You know, if you're a 20-goal scorer and Bruce Boudreau thinks he can be that, then you better be a good two-way player because you're not a 40-goal scorer. I think that was his point. If you're a 40-goal scorer, fine, we'll let a few things slide,
and
right? But you better be able to play.
And I think the writing had been on the wall for a few games for Hoglander, because you saw the ice times decreasing. Mm-hmm. So without Boudreau having to say anything out loud, it was pretty obvious that he was not enamored with the young guys' play. Probably one of the things that of a positive year rookie season last year for Hoglander, one of the negatives would probably have been, as we're always looking for the house of negativity, he probably got away with more than he normally would have or should have, because what were the stakes last year?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you're going to get on a guy's case when he's skating on a line with Jimmy Vesey and Travis Boyd, and there's guys coming in and out of the lineup and you're losing a bunch of games.
Well, I think just watching Hoglander play offensively, you love his motor.
Yep.
And you love his enthusiasm. And maybe you don't pick up some of the defensive things that coaches are harping on.
Or you just, they're just not as important because the stakes aren't as high.
True.
Yeah.
Now, Thatcher Demko was brilliant again last night. He stopped Michael McCarron on a breakaway late in the second period after Quinn Hughes kind of got caught dancing a little bit in the Nashville end. And that was huge. You know, if the game easily could have been gone a different way if Nashville had scored there. It's 2-1 going into the third. Instead, the game is tied at 1 heading into third, and the Canucks break through on the power play. And they needed to do that, and we've talked time and time again on this show about special teams. Mm-hmm. It is really hard to win games if you lose a special teams battle. That's what happened the first three games of this road trip. The Canucks lost the special teams battle, mostly because the power play wasn't very good, but also because they were giving up power play goals. They gave up a power play goal, I believe, in every game on this road trip. So the PK needs work, even though they were disciplined. Like, that helped them. They weren't shorthanded very often, but they surrendered a goal on basically half the power plays that they gave up. Brock Besser got a power play goal last night that put the Canucks ahead 2-1 in the third period. So that was obviously a huge goal. And then Lamico, the Lamico line.
Lamico's been cooking lately.
Yeah.
It's been all right.
Yeah.
It's actually been better than all right. That's understating it.
No, that line has been good.
Yeah, Boudreaux had a remark in the postgame where he said, we might have something here. Like, it's difficult to try and develop the bottom six or the bottom two centers on your team. You kind of need a big, strong, physical guy that can do the defensive work and then chip in with offense every now and again. You know, the last couple of weeks, Lamico's been really solid for them, and that's found money. I understand what you had to trade out the door to get him in, but I don't think the expectations were super high for the guy coming in. If you can turn him into an everyday regular 4C, that's a plus for the organization.
So that made it 3-1 when Lamico scored, and the Canucks were able to hang on. They did kill a penalty late, and that was obviously good, but the PK still needs work. Now they return home after a 5-game road trip to play Florida on Friday. Mm-hmm. They've also got home games against St. Louis and the struggling Edmonton Oilers, and we'll talk about the Oilers in just a bit. But I just kind of want to put a bow on this 5-game road trip that we've talked up for a long time, or it's felt like we've talked it up for months. Well, even when the schedule came out,
yep,
I think some people noticed it. Now, the Canucks went 2-3 on this road trip, so they lost more than they won. But if there was a test to pass, I think they passed it. They played well in the losses, especially the loss in Tampa Bay. Again, I keep on harping on the special teams because I tweeted this out last night. If the Canucks could learn how to kill penalties, they might have something here.
Well, it's
they still
yeah. got
to learn though. Like if you look at all the stats, right? Like 5-on-5 play, and then special teams, the penalty kill is the reason they're not in a playoff spot.
Okay.
If they could kill a penalty, their penalty killing is below 70%, which is shockingly bad. Shockingly bad. If it's, it was like 80%, they might be in a playoff spot right now.
I know you love talking about the special teams, and I know the penalty kill has been a source of frustration throughout the entire year, but I find it amusing that we've come in here this morning. For me, I had a totally different take. That entire road trip, especially the tail end of it, the number one story way ahead of special teams is Thatcher Demko. Like, to me, that was the story of last night. That was the story of the trip, because when you talk about...
Maybe I'm taking him for granted now.
I think you probably are, to be honest, because you look at what this trip entailed. That's a heavy workload for the guy. That game and the games plural that Halak might have seen, and this will stretch into this week as well if the quarantine goes as long as we think... Those are all going to be Demko starts. They're not playing Spencer Martin. Mm-hmm. They're just going to, I mean, I think in a way this might actually benefit Boudreaux because he doesn't have to make a decision, but Demko, probably the reason they won the game last night. I mean, they weren't getting...
One of the reasons.
And that's after going in on the second of a back-to-back and stopping a Washington team who I know that they were missing some offensive weapons, but still had plenty more in the chamber, was very good against Washington. I'd also add that if you want to talk about a redemptive arc and narrative throughout the trip, Demko's trip didn't start very well. I would say the worst of the games that he had was the one against Florida to open it up, where he was just okay. And he set the bar so
But we gave him a pass on that one because they hadn't played for so long.
And he probably earned it at that point. Can we play some audio from Boudreaux? I think Bruce really gets it right now. He's like, wait a minute. I know what I got here in Vancouver. I've got an all-star goalie. And maybe that's going to be able to bail me out more often than not. It's amazing because this was the same guy that Travis Green had. But I think Boudreaux's loosened the reins a little bit, knowing that he's got Demko back there. This is Bruce Boudreaux on his all-star goalie right now.
Well, I mean, we have a lot of heart. We got a great goaltender. There's no doubt about it. And when we do make mistakes, he stopped two or three clean-cut breakaways tonight. And he's a wall back there. And when you have that, it's a little bit of relief when the team isn't doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. Also, you know, learn that there's a lot of heart, there's a lot of will and a lot of want. And I use that phrase a lot, and it's out there, and especially when it was, you know, when we tied the game and you could see that we wanted this game a lot. It meant a lot to us, and to be able to go with a 2-game winning streak home where we haven't been in over a month. And Look forward to being there, you know, in a couple of days. But I think the big thing is belief and want, and that these guys want it. They don't want to sit. They don't want to be thought of as a bottom place team or anything like that. They've got the heart. A lot of them have hearts of lions, and it showed in this trip.
So it's a really interesting dynamic because Boudreau has said in the past that Demko reminds him a lot of John Gibson, who, of course, he had in Anaheim. And remember, the furthest Boudreau's ever gone in his career in terms of success deep into the playoffs was in Anaheim, where he had some of the best goaltending in any of his tenures. I mean, I know he had some decent netminders in Washington, but that never really coincided with a peak and a deep playoff run. Now, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself.
And in one of the most his most famous losses as a coach, it was the goaltender on the other side.
Yeah, he got out
killed his team.
Yeah, absolutely.
By Jaro Halak, oddly enough.
So, I mean, look at this trip. Demko's on the ice for almost every single minute of the five games. I mean, save the ones where he's getting pulled at the end for an extra attacker. So that in and of itself is an impressive feat because there's not a lot of goalies now that'll go all five on a five-game roadie, especially with a back-to-back in there. The last two games, brilliant. And, someone texted in earlier. We got a text really bright and early into the Dunbar Lumber text line. 650. Oh, it's Mike, the urologist from Brockville. Is that, do you have it there?
Yeah. It's an early what we learned. The drafting, development, and contract for Thatcher Demko is not lauded enough. From when he should have come up from the AHL, how many games he should get, who to protect in the expansion draft, and how much he should get on his contract, the organization has nailed them all. The guy is an absolute stud. We've talked about this before, and we've talked about it in the vein of, if only they developed all their players the way they've developed Thatcher Demko.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mike, the urologist from Brockville, is absolutely right. The Canucks did everything right. They were patient with him.
Yep.
From the time that they drafted him through the AHL to when he needed some NHL experience all the way until he became a starter. The organization does deserve kudos for that, as does Thatcher Demko. He's a mature guy.
If you want to ask about the evolution and development of Demko, you got to put the tail end of that as they made the decision not to bring back Markstrom in free agency and give the job full-time to Demko. Because remember, at the time,
they also kept Ian Clark.
Yeah, all those things, right? I mean, that's big. If someone just texted in, Demko will end up being Ian Clark's masterpiece, which is quite a statement because Ian Clark's done a lot of good things with a lot of good goalies. But this is, right now, if you're going to talk about the Canucks hanging around the fringes of this playoff chase and then making a push at some point, I would safely suggest that Demko is going to be the backbone, the rock, a big push for that. Because what this road trip showed is that he can handle a really heavy workload, right? Like if you're in a situation where, we want to get our backup in, and this is probably the night to do it, but we've got two really crucial points on the road. Maybe we throw Demko in there when he's a little bit fatigued. I think he showed that he can handle that on this trip. Overall, I know we were almost going to make this our poll question this morning. What would you grade this out as in terms of a successful trip for the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, I think it's still a B. Like they played well. That's the most important thing. Process over results. I really liked that they found a way to win the last two games of the road trip. You talk about heart. You lose those first three games, you easily could have been distressed. You're losing Connor Garland from the lineup, and then for last night's game, you lose the captain, Bo Horvat, and you still find ways to win. But it wasn't perfect. I'm not going to give it an A. I'm not going to give it an A. Like the B is as a B grade is as high as I'm going to go. And I agree with you. Thatcher Demko was the main storyline of this road trip, especially how it ended. But I keep coming back to special teams because I think it's going to be the difference between making the playoffs or making a decent run at them or missing them.
Yeah.
The PK is the worst in franchise history. It's one of the worst in league history. It's that bad.
I do wonder if there's something Rutherford can do either a Band-Aid or a patchwork solution through a minor trade? Because there are some structural flaws to it. Like, they don't have the right personnel
to
do what they want
to
do. It's hard to fix, but it's something that you could maybe look to address.
You're not going
to
give up futures to do it.
Because here's the thing, is that if the season does become completely uncoiled, and let's say that they go and they get a valiant playoff chase falls just short, there's going to be a lot of rumination and frustration that the not just a bad penalty kill, like a historically bad penalty kill, is what kept you out. Because everyone would say, well, wait a minute, this is an obvious glaring problem. We're not just talking about a poor special teams unit. We're talking about one of the worst in the history of the NHL, or at least the history of the franchise. You had to address that at some point. You couldn't keep that, you know, festering wound just being open. I get that part, totally. Another thing I wanted to touch on before we move along here, you mentioned that, and everyone saw it, that there was a stretch midway through the game where the Canucks might have put together their most dominant, complete performance. You know, you talk about process over results of the season.
After Pettersson scored in the second period, right, they took over the game.
I think that is a very important thing to know, because we're talking.
We haven't seen that enough. Okay, this year at all.
Working with you here, though, we're talking about, like, Demko was great. Demko didn't bail them out of a game where they were getting caved in. Like, let's not make that the narrative here. They played very well, and they carried play and performed so very well in a stretch that, I think we should mention this, was without two top six forwards in Garland and Horvat. Like, I think that really speaks to the group and what Boudreau was talking about with heart, the heart of a lion per 60.
Well, I think a lot of it comes back to Pettersson. How many times have we seen extended zone time shifts in the offensive zone where Pettersson is part of it, and it looks like a power play for the Canucks? It just hasn't. And
we haven't seen it enough this year.
We used to see it with the Lotto line,
and
we haven't seen it, I would say, at all with Pettersson, and frankly, not much from the Canucks. Like, there just hasn't been those extended shifts, and the Canucks did it at the end of a 5-game road trip without two of their top forwards against a pretty good team in Nashville.
Yep.
It was impressive. And hopefully they can bring that home to Vancouver and there are no hiccups on the way home, because they've got a tough stretch waiting for them at Rogers Arena with the Panthers, the Blues, and the Oilers. The
Panthers got smoked last night.
Panthers did get smoked last night. And it wasn't good news for the Canucks in terms of standings, because the Flames picked up points. So this is how far the Canucks still have to go, by the way. The Calgary Flames are 7 games over NHL 500. Okay. They're 18-11-6, and they're still not officially into a playoff spot. They're still 2 points back of San Jose for the second wild card spot, although they have 5 games in hand on the Sharks. But that might be the bar where the Flames are right now, and the Canucks are just back to NHL 500, right? They're going to need some more stretches of not just win 2 here and lose 1 and win 2 and lose. They're going to need to string some wins together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In order to really get back
like
in the playoff race.
They did a great job of salvaging the trip. They need to carry this on. Remember, Boudreau said a couple times, and we played the audio a few days ago, that he considered this not a 5-game road trip, even though it was a 5-game road trip. He saw it as a 7-game stretch, which included the Florida game at home on Friday, and then the subsequent home game against the Blues. That 7-game stretch where they needed to win more often than they lost just to stay pace within the playoff picture. Like he said, if we lose these, we're going to need to go on another one of these improbable 9-game unbeaten streaks, and those just don't happen all that often during the regular season.
Now, the good news is the Anaheim Ducks, who are currently 3rd in the Pacific, look like they're catchable. They look like they're very vulnerable. And believe it or not, the Canucks passed the Edmonton Oilers in terms of points last night. Now, the Oilers have played 4 fewer games, but still, the fact that the Canucks surpassed the Oilers, who got off to that amazing start, and the Canucks got off to the dreadful start.
You're listening to the best of the day.
The Canucks just won a big game last night. I want to look ahead to what they've got coming back to Rogers Arena. They've got the Florida Panthers on Friday. Then they've got visits from the St. Louis Blues and the Edmonton Oilers. We know how good the Panthers are, although the Flames put it on them last night, so they're not unstoppable. When would we be able to say that Elias Pettersson is back.
He's back already, baby. The swag is back. Last night was actually an even better step, I thought, because
I got my swagger back.
That was Petey in his Zoom yesterday. He wasn't pissy at all. I think yesterday was, like, I know the two goals against Washington were production-wise better, but I actually think yesterday, because he had to move back to center and looked quite good mm-hmm. and effective doing it.
I love that line.
That's a nice.
I love the Podkolzin, Hoglander, Pettersson line.
It's interesting for sure.
Petey's the oldest one on it.
I know. He's the gray hair on the whole
He's like,
thing.
Come on, boys, let's go. I've been through the wars before.
They're calling him dad. No, I think that there's something to it because you go to the wing against Washington, you pot a pair of goals, first multi-goal game in almost 12 months, and then you go in to Nashville. And let's not forget, not great circumstances. Horvat lands on COVID-19 protocol, so Petey's forced to move back to center
mm-hmm.
and has the kind of game that he had where he looked very good. He had the youthful exuberance of Hoagie and Pods on his wings, and that's another step in the right direction. It's hard to really say when a guy's back, and I'm not trying to punt on the question because I get what you're getting at. Like, when can we say, all right, all is well.
Yeah.
We can breathe the sigh of relief. We're ready to embrace this 3-year deal. Let's start talking extension right now. I get that we want to get there. I would say this next match, your next game is always going to be the bar, right? Because mm-hmm. you go to this game against Florida now. You get, again, one of the elite center matchups in the NHL, assuming that it pans out that way with Barkov. You get a high-powered team. Petey gets the chance to make up for what I would say was not a great game for him, that first game of the road trip in Florida.
Yeah, I think – I don't know how many games it's going to take, but it's one of those things where I'll know it when I don't – when I can trust Petey.
You know it when you see it?
No, I'll know it when I see it because I'll trust Petey to make Petey plays again. Right?
Isn't that the old identifier with porn? I don't know exactly how to classify it.
Yeah, I think that was like the Supreme Court ruling. I know it when I see it or something like that.
Same idea.
Well, different kind of because it's not pornography we're talking about.
Ah, one slight difference.
You've got me a little off track here. But
talk about Petey, not porn.
No, there's just a trust factor that you have when you're watching the game where you trust, you know, when Petey picks up a puck along the side, along the wall, that he's not going to fumble it away. He still had a pretty bad fumble last night. It was at the end of one of the periods, and I think the Canucks were on the power play, and he had the puck at the point, and he just kind of, like, fell over.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of like, how can I trust a guy that gets the puck and just falls over? And I think I'll just know it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't have, you know, I'll give you a little Seahawks talk here.
Seahawks talk.
I don't have the trust with Russ right now. Like remember when he would drop back to pass and you're kind of like, something good is going to happen here because it's Russell Wilson. Or when he would scramble, you'd be like, something's good is going to happen here because it's Russell Wilson. Well, I don't have that trust anymore. And I still don't have that trust with Petey just after two games. You get to the point where it might be a defenseman who you're comfortable, every time the puck goes into the corner, you're comfortable that the defenseman is going to come out with the puck and start the breakout, right?
Yeah.
That's the same thing with Pettersson. When he gets the puck, you're like, okay, something good is going to happen here, and you're surprised when it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
I'm still not there yet. It's only been two games, right? Bruce Boudreau himself, if you think we're being, like, negative, he actually said after the Washington game, like, hopefully it's not a one-off. And the good news is, it wasn't.
Yeah, that's the real key.
It was almost
a better performance last night when you consider the circumstance.
Yes.
I'll say the thing that you're talking about, the trust of Bruff, if you will, that can be hard to attain because your own personal biases and objectivity or lack thereof comes into it, right? Like, for example, Russell Wilson, would you say right now that in your mind he's washed? Like, we've seen the best of Russell Wilson. We're not going to see it again. He won't get back to that spot.
I'm not convinced of that.
Okay.
No, I'm not convinced
you know, the funny,
of that.
The funny thing was, as I was watching yesterday, was for some reason, the video of the comeback.
I saw that too. It made me sad.
Because you watch him play.
The video of the comeback against the Packers in the 2000. It was actually in 2015. NFC title game.
The crazy comeback.
Before the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Where they were down 16-0 in the third quarter. And I forgot that they were being shut out at that point. So
that was the time I did my change of venue.
Yeah.
I watched the first half at local in Kitsilano, said, I need a change of venue.
Yep.
And I went home and they pulled it off.
So if the Russ magic was ever crystallized in a moment, it was the snap of the fingers, because that offense had literally done nothing. They had no points late in the third quarter. And then, yes, it got kickstarted with the fake field goal, but Russ scored on a scramble. And I remember watching him just dart into the end zone.
Did you see his escapability? I believe they needed to convert.
It was the two-point conversion. Yeah.
He doesn't have that anymore. So and that's what he has to realize.
Yeah. And that was one of it. And then the long ball is still there at times, but the walk-off touchdown in overtime against the Packers, it came out of his hand so beautifully. It was a beautifully thrown ball.
It's a curse.
Yeah. And I'm like, that was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
2015. That was 7 years ago. Is that going to happen?
He's lost his accuracy in the short passing game, too. And I don't know if it's the injury he had or if it's mental.
Or if it's age.
Yeah.
Father Time. Now, anyway, we go back to Pettersson. Pettersson doesn't have any of those Father Time, age, he's been around for a long time narratives in his debate. What we're talking about here is, will he get back to being the player that we once knew? And if so, how do we know that he's quote-unquote back? One of them would be just the raw. I mean, the easiest way to do it is like, well, go to the numbers, right? So statistically, he's not on pace for a good year, even with the last little bump in the last little while. I mean, right now, he's on pace to be a 20-goal, 40-point player. That's very run-of-the-mill for a guy of his talent level that's getting paid what he's getting paid. If he can get those numbers up a little bit, rookie numbers, get these numbers up. If he can get them up, I mean, is it feasible right now? He's on 9 goals through 39 games. Could he get it to 25? Could he even get it to 30?
Sure, he could. Yeah.
Could he get it to 30?
Well, I don't know.
It's a lot. It's asking a lot. If he's going to get to
30, quite a turnaround.
If he's going to get to 30 goals, he's going to have to score 21 goals in 41 games, essentially.
You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Brough.
Wednesday, Halford and Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the morning, final hour of this program, What We Learns, David Quadrelli, all that good stuff is brought to you by the Dilari family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better, North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. We've got a big final hour. I will make the call. I will pull the choke chain, as it was, for What We Learns. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is the SMALT, S-M-A-L-T. That's a word. Alternative. Get your What We Learns in. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Let us know. We'll read them in the final half hour of this program. That's when we do What We Learns.
I think Quads wants to get into Thatcher Demko's workload. Okay. Who are the only two goalies?
Do you know this? Is this a trivia question?
Yes. Okay. That have spent more time on ice than Thatcher Demko this season.
Is it UC Saros, one of them?
Jari, one of them?
Tristan Jari?
No,
Jari was on
Jari's
protocol.
Fourth.
Yeah, okay.
Jari's fourth overall. So
hold on, let me make one more
so
guess.
UC Saros, so oddly enough, we actually didn't see UC Saros last night. Rare night off for Saros.
I'm going to say John Gibson.
Wrong. Who Vasilevsky.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because he missed some time in COVID-19 protocol as well. Interesting. But Demko's the leader by a... He's number one in minutes, right?
No, he's number three. I said there's two.
Oh, those are two ahead of him.
There's two goalies.
Sorry,
well, I thought. Who did you think two would be below him?
Yeah,
or?
I thought we went one, two. I thought Demko was number one. I thought you said who are the only other two that were close.
Who are all the goalies that have played less than Thatcher Demko this season?
Is it David Rittich? Okay, let's go.
He's on the list. Yes, that's one of them.
That's one of them. Let's go to the phone lines now. We are joined by David Quadrelli, Canucks Army, and you hear him right here on the weekends on Sportsnet 650. What up, Quads?
Not much. I'm enjoying the stimulating goalie talk going on.
Do you want to continue it? Talk about that. I'm going to give you a talk about question. You can be a real media member now. Talk about Thatcher Demko's workload.
Yeah, so it was really interesting, actually, because, you know, fans in this market don't have to look far to remember a goalie working too much and going down with injury in the form of Jacob Markstrom. So when I started to see Thatcher Demko playing all these games, I was you know, getting interested in, okay, what kind of things start to slip when a goalie's getting tired, right? And there's a story from the Rogers Arena press box one day when Kevin Woodley was sitting in the press box and turned around to everybody and just randomly said, Thatcher Demko's about to let in a bad goal. And, you know, I was talking to Woodley about how he kind of came to that opinion, how he was able to predict that, because sure enough, Thatcher Demko let in a bad goal very shortly after. But the reason he was able to see that was because Thatcher Demko misplayed a puck. And that's a very small thing, but it was the sign of a goaltender who was starting to have his details slip because he was working too much. Now, Ian Clark's done a lot of work with Thatcher Demko, and a lot of the goalies that have come through here obviously have gone through similar stuff, but Thatcher Demko's really been one that's absorbed everything Ian Clark's told him. And one of those things is not letting your detail slip, no matter how big the score is, how wide the margin is of the score in a game, no matter how much you've played, don't let your detail slip. And with Thatcher Demko, you really see that. And there was like one moment on this road trip where Thatcher Demko did something like he didn't integrate to a post as quickly as he normally does. And I was like, oh, okay, his details are slipping. But it really wasn't much. Like, it was one thing, and I kind of noticed it, and I was like, okay, maybe this is something to look for. It wasn't. He was fine the rest of the road trip. So I reached out to Mike McKenna, you know, Canucks legend, because, you know, just to pick his brain a little bit about what happens when a goalie, you know, starts to slip a little bit, starts to play too much. And he said, like, you know, some goalies just don't have that. Like, some goalies play and are workhorses. Like, every goalie will tell you they're a workhorse and they like to play a lot, but not all of them will actually keep their details there, and not all of them will actually not lose effectiveness. So with Demko, it's kind of that scenario where you can play the wheels off him. He needs to be able to tell you when he's hurt. If he's on the trainer's table every night, maybe it's time to give him a rest, but it's also just the mental side, right? Like, the workload is fine. Like, I'm not worried about the workload from a Thatcher Demko's going to get hurt perspective. I'm more worried about it from a, okay, he might need just a break just to kind of reset mentally. But again, like, you know, he got through this road trip. They've got a big homestand coming up. So obviously with the rescheduling and stuff, there's going to be a lot of games as well. You know, he's going to need a break, but he did get through this road trip and he did it just fine. So honestly, I wouldn't be too worried about the workload.
It still does beg the question, though, what should the Canucks do with Yaro Halak?
Whatever Yaro Halak wants.
because he's got the control. But, you know, even if Yaro Halak was open to a trade, I think you've got to question whether or not it's the right move and what message it would send to the dressing room. Because Thatcher Demko, as well as he's been playing, he still can't play every game. And let's say the backup, how many games do the Canucks have left? Like, what, like 40 some odd games? Let's say the backup would play six of those games. That could still be six very important games if the Canucks are trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Yaroslav Halak's been great this season, right? Like, the results maybe haven't been there, but again, that's run support and the Canucks not being good at the start of the year, especially. Yaro Halak's been good this year, right? And look, on the weekend show on the Canucks warm-up with Faber and Quads, I've been dubbed the Spencer Martin truther because, look, Spencer Martin's done a lot of good things in Abbotsford this year, right? But, like, you're totally right, Jason. Coming in and playing six games in the NHL is very different than it is playing in the AHL and looking good, right? Like, it's been interesting to see Martin's progression because obviously everybody thought DiPietro and Seelovs would be the kind of the 1-2 punch in Abbotsford, but it's really been Martin who started the most games out of those guys. And, you know, he's done great, and he's really kind of, they've brought a cohesive system to his game. And I think he's one of those goaltenders who came in, saw what Curtis Sanford and Ian Clark were selling and was just like, okay, you know, make me a better goaltender. And I think you're starting to see the results of that. That being said, you know, I would like to see him get a game. And I was even, you know, obviously, you know, the road trip, they won the game, but I was even saying, like, maybe give him one of those back-to-backs on the road trip. Not even about a don't hurt Demko style and keep that workload light, but more so from a what do they have in Spencer Martin, right? And that being said, I do trust that Ian Clark kind of is able to evaluate that in practice, but sometimes you just don't know, right? Like, you don't know until the guy faces NHL shots in game action. So, like, you're absolutely right, Jason. I don't think they have enough. They don't have enough of a safety net to know that, okay, well, if we get rid of Yaro Halak, Spencer Martin can step in and be an NHL backup. They don't know that for sure. They can they can think that all they want with, oh, well, look how good his details are in practice. But you don't know. Like, Mikey DiPietro had one of the best training camps I've ever seen from a goaltender, period. Just in terms of movement, the details of his game looked like a really, really strong goalie. And then he had a really rough start in Abbotsford. And guys, I attribute that to having almost a year off of not facing actual game action, right? Like, you know, the Canucks and DiPietro himself can say all they want that, oh, well, it didn't hurt me, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, I laugh when people think they know what's best for me. That's what DiPietro said. But the fact of the matter is, as soon as he got back into game action, there were struggles, right? So I guess my point is, it's tough to kind of judge how a goalie's going to play based on practice. And, you know, the fact of the matter is Spencer Martin didn't get a start on this trip, and there's no real feasible option for him to get a start in the next little bit here.
We're speaking to David Quadrelli from Canucks Army and the Canucks Conversation right here on Sportsnet 650. Jason asked me this question earlier. I'll throw it to you now. When will we know that Elias Pettersson is back, or is he already back?
Yeah, this is really interesting because I'm a little reluctant to say he's already back, but Stéphane Rougé wrote an article at Canucks Army that's up right now just about how it wasn't just that two-goal game that showed that Pettersson was out of his slump. And, you know, obviously everybody was tweeting the Keanu Reeves thing, oh, I'm thinking I'm back as soon as Pettersson scored those goals. But the fact of the matter is, he was good on this road trip. Like, a lot of his underlying statistics were really, really solid. Like, guys, in that game against Tampa, he had a Corsi percentage, like, around 80%. And, like, again, like, a 75%, something around there, expected goals for. And, again, like, 80% control of scoring chances, 80% control of high danger scoring chances. Like,
but that also could speak to his line mates, right?
That's true.
That could also speak to his line mates. And I think, like, I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think his body language at times suggested that he was still in a slump. And I just think it really, really helps. Like, you can feel that you're playing better, and he did have some chances in those first three games to score, and he missed the net a bunch of times. But that was also part of the slump, right? Like, he wasn't finishing his chances. And if you look at his shooting percentage, a lot of people look at his shooting percentage right now, which I believe is at something like 8%, and it's normally around 15%, and said, well, he's obviously going to regress in a positive way, and his shooting percentage will bounce back. But not necessarily, because isn't scoring goals and finishing those opportunities, like, isn't that a skill in itself?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't buy the whole shooting percentage thing. I think you're right. But that being said, like, you know, not to push back too much, but also, like, you have to remember here that, you know, it is a results-based game, and confidence comes, you know, along the way. And then you have those moments where you really kind of get that confidence where you can start to finish, right? And, you know, one moment that really does stand out is him getting tripped by Frederik Andersen. That was an embarrassing moment because, you know, I know he broke his stick, but he did give up on the play, right? Like, he was just gliding back and the puck was by his skates. And I think rookie year Elias Pettersson, year one Elias Pettersson, year two Elias Pettersson is trying to at least protect that puck with his skates. He's staying involved in the play, right? So not only did he give up on a play, but then he got tripped by the goaltender, and there was really not much he could say because the goalie was making a play on the puck. He wasn't the guy. He was the guy not making a play on the puck, right? Mm-hmm. So again, I think that was a bit of an embarrassing moment for him, and I think it may have served as a bit of a catalyst for him to kind of get that confidence back, because it was almost like he had hit rock bottom and had been, you know, completely rocked and just woken up right away, because he was like, okay, this is ridiculous, I need to start converting here. And I think that's what you started to see. But my point is that, you know, his numbers, his underlying numbers, like I just kind of pointed out in that game against Tampa, they weren't good before, like, no matter who his line mates were,
right?
And I know he just started playing the wing with Horvat, mm-hmm. but again, like, I know the first game it was good, and then the second game it kind of slumped a little, but then you know, that game against Tampa, they really came alive, right? And you're right, like, the line mates definitely helped, but again, like, even last night, his line mates weren't exceptional, right? And he was doing it himself. So I think that all kind of plays into the idea that, okay, maybe he's not back just yet, but I think you're liking everything you're seeing from him, and a nice homestand now is going to be huge for Elias Pettersson.
What did you think of that? I know you just kind of briefly touched on his line mates, but what did you think of Bruce Boudreau putting together Pettersson with Hoglander and Podkolzin making Petey the oldest guy on that line, which is kind of funny.
Made me feel old, to be honest with you. I like the idea of it because, again, like, we have to go back a bit, right? Because Nils Höglander was a guy that I don't want to use the term called out, but I don't know what other term you can use for what Bruce Boudreaux said about Nils Höglander. Like, flat out saying he needs to learn the game. I don't think there's another word more appropriate than called out. So, again, Nils Höglander called out by his coach and, you know, looked better, right? Like, looked better after that. And I don't know if that's kind of the sum of knowing that he was going to be a healthy scratch, if Connor Garland didn't go into COVID protocol, those comments, again, like adding into it, I don't know if that was the reason. I certainly don't think it could have hurt. But again, like, Höglander looked pretty involved last night, right? And I think that's the thing, is you need to see, like, results in the defensive end. You can't see those miscues. Like, there were a few of them on the road trip that were glaringly obvious and resulted in goals, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was what was fueling a lot of Boudreaux's criticisms of Höglander. So for his line mates, like, I think you're kind of seeing the same thing from Podkolzin, and you kind of know what you're getting from him. And, you know, he is an effective forward, but I think Höglander especially was the one that I was especially impressed with, because it was almost like Pettersson was the veteran presence on that line, right? Like, that's kind of what it felt like when that line was formed. And again, like, that's something Höglander needs. And, like, we know that, you know, Pettersson's not much older than Höglander, but this is the guy that Pettersson's kind of taken under his wing. They've committed to practicing one-timers at the end of every practice. Like, if you go to a Rogers Arena practice, they're out there at the end of every practice. They're the last guys off the ice, just taking one-timers and practicing that. And Pettersson's trying to teach Höglander, you know, how to be more effective with the one-timer. And that's something that those two are working on. So again, like, I like the lineup. I like what they did with it. But again, like, that's like your veteran presence, right? In Pettersson with Höglander, which kind of makes me feel old.
Quads, great stuff today, bud. Thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week and the games this weekend. We'll do this again real soon.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That's David Quadrelli from Canucks Army. Also from the Canucks Conversation, you can hear him and Faber together. Fabes. Remember Fabes? He was here yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that's going to be on the weekends on Sportsnet 650.
We need some more What We Learns into the Dunbar Lumber text line, like this one that just came in from Marcus and Gibson's What We Learned. I learned that unless Petey scores on every shot and never fumbles a puck again, some fans will still see all his flaws. Okay, this is obviously a response to something that I said earlier in the show when I said I'm still not on a level where I trust Pettersson. And there are some players that are so good that you just know that when they touch the puck, most of the time, or in fact almost all the time, something good is going to happen for your team. It doesn't mean that every time they fumble the puck, you lose complete faith in the player. It just means that I think, for me, it's going to take some time before I fully trust Pettersson again. That's all I meant.
Yeah, and that's an individual thing. We talked about it. It's like implicit as that is all of your personality and biases and everything else, right? You have a different level.
It's been two games.
Exactly.
It's been two games.
You're not ready to jump back into a relationship. It's too early. You're just dating, I think. Is that the analogy we're looking at here?
Pettersson's drop in play.
Not ready to get hurt again.
Pettersson's drop in play shocked me. There haven't been many examples of this.
What was the one we finally came up with? Simone Gagné?
Well, that's the one they came up with in the Athletic.
Yeah,
like,
right.
They had to look so hard.
And even then, it was
and even then, I was kind of like, I don't know. He was a winger. He was a goal-scoring winger. Yeah. Like, he wasn't, you know, it's a different type of player for me. The Pettersson, and I wonder, you know, I half wonder, how much is it to do with the pandemic? Because here's something that hasn't happened since I've been alive. Like, this unprecedented, for me at least, during my lifetime, global event that has thrown the league and day-to-day life,
everything
up in the air. Right? Like, how much has that contributed to a lot of sports stories, whether, you know, it's player struggles or coaches' relationships with the team. Like, I think about Paul Maurice in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. How much did that contribute to him going, I'm out of here. Like, I think I'm done with this team.
Yeah.
This team needs a new voice. Like, would that have happened? You know? Like,
I don't think so.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And we're talking about Elias Pettersson, who is a super young guy that came to a new city, a new continent, a completely new life.
And he discovered North America.
He did. And he was thrown into this new life, and he was getting all sorts of positive attention. And then a global pandemic hit. He must have been homesick at times. And then his game started slipping, and then it started slipping a little bit more. Then he had an injury to deal with. And then all of a sudden, all the good stuff that he had in his life, you know, it seemed to be turning to the negative during all this pandemic. How could that not be a factor in his life?
No, I absolutely agree. You said you wanted to make a call for more What We Learns. We can get them in now. Gary on the North Shore is in one right now. I feel bad. So, you know what the thing is, Jason, sometimes with the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket, is we never really know what someone's going through in the moment that they send their text, right? We just assume that the situation is normal, or maybe you're sitting around casually listening to the Halford and Brush Show on Sportsnet 650. But Gary on the North Shore sent through a torrent of texts and signed everyone with a palm tree emoji.
Okay.
I'm not really sure what was going on, right? But he was upset during Quadrelli's hit, and he's firing off all these texts. And then finally, we get to it as Gary finally submits a What We Learned. He said, "What We Learned, as I wait to cross the Lionsgate Bridge," in all caps, "this city needs a new bridge." Signed, Gary in the North Shore, in all caps. So see, now it all makes sense. Gary's not really upset with the content of the radio show. He's frustrated because he's stuck in traffic on the Lionsgate Bridge.
Can't it be both?
And he's taking it out on us. Sometimes we need...
So if that makes you feel better.
Yeah. Like, if we need to... You know, sometimes we need to understand what we are to certain people. We're not just sports talk radio hosts. Sometimes we're soundboards. Confessionals, if you will.
What, that people can just abuse if they're having a bad day?
Pretty much. And that's part of the gig. That's why they pay us money, is we come in here for 3 hours and we take your abuse and deal with it.
Do you remember we had that show at the old station, and the Canucks were in a losing streak and things were looking bleak for the team, and we just told the listeners to tee off on us?
Yep, I do remember that.
In the text inbox. And let me tell you, people took us up on it.
They obliged.
And at the end of that, I was like, that's a bad idea. My feelings are very hurt right now.
Was that like a roast? Like a listener roast?
No,
it wasn't smart enough.
No, because roasts are funny. We also, another one that we did when we were trying to do like the sounding board confessional thing. Remember when we asked everyone, just give us the saddest song you know, like a tearjerker song or one that makes you cry, and then we played them on the air?
Oh, yeah, people were breaking down in tears,
crying. Why the song was sad to them? It's like, it reminds me of my dead dad, like that kind of stuff.
It was sad.
I don't know why we did that. We thought we were doing something positive.
You guys are groundbreaking radio here.
We thought we were doing something positive for the listeners, because like, oh, it's a community, you know, the Halbro Army.
Well, sometimes you need a good cry.
Well, we mission accomplished. I played Lou Reed's "Perfect Day," and I could hear people crying
right
in traffic, right, and that's when I was like, we've gone too far. Like, why are we just triggering tears at this point?
Lou Reed is the perfect "I need a cry" artist.
It was that scene from Trainspotting.
Yeah.
I think when everything's crashing down and it's a perfect day's playing, and it's so sad. It's so depressing. And I'm like, you know what? We should play this on a rainy Tuesday morning in Vancouver when people are struggling with bills and traffic and family.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time.
All right. I'm going to take a short break. We're going to have an extra long What We Learn segment. So relying on you, the listener, to text in your What We Learns into the Dunbar Lumber text
Sorry,
line at 650-650.
You know what else we did one time? Do you remember? I think this was all in correlation with the start of the pandemic when we were struggling for topics. Do you remember when we did the ASMR show?
Oh, right. Yeah, you know, I forgot about that.
No.
There's this cross-section of society that likes the sounds of...
I know what ASMR is.
Yeah. And there, so there's the YouTube videos, and some of them are like...
you rub the mic. Yeah.
It's not as loud. There's the wrapping paper folding and crinkling.
Yeah.
People chewing on food. The sound of like a rake scraping across grass. Like,
you know what I like?
Yeah, what?
Cats purring.
See, that's a pleasant one,
mm-hmm.
but there's some people that like the really jarring ones, like the chewing on food, chewing with your mouth open.
Who likes that?
I don't know, but there's a big, big YouTube industry based on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, people like, yeah, I don't know what it is. Laddie's just staring. Do you know of this?
I know of it, but the chewing food thing just sets
like,
me
that's
off.
Gross.
Yes.
I get angry when I hear people
but
chewing.
But some people love it.
I don't understand that one at all. Oh.
Yeah.
Who just said that?
Dom.
Is that Dom?
Dom, yeah.
Wow, you could make a lot of money on YouTube.
More money than I make here.
That's like one of those jobs where you're like, I'm a foot model.
What kind of foot model? It's like, do you have OnlyFans?
I have an OnlyFans account. Yeah, I make 200 grand a year.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know what you should do?
Rex Ryan is paying for your mortgage.
Yeah.
And then some.
That just,
by the way, that went away real quick,
it's
right?
It's not. Like, he leans into it every now and again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he'll drop a line when he's on those pregames. He's like, well, you know, I'm a big foot guy. And
didn't
like,
he make a video with his wife?
Videos, plural.
Videos with his wife.
Yeah, there was a series.
And he wasn't even that... Was he careful to hide his face?
Why does he need to hide it? It's his wife.
No, but they published them.
Yeah, because they were into it.
Yeah.
They will not be kink-shamed.
No, I know he wasn't doing anything wrong.
If he was doing
still,
it with someone,
isn't that a private thing?
It's 2022. It's socially acceptable now.
I guess.
I think he just really liked them. I don't think there was. I think I was,
he was a fan of his own work.
I
didn't think Jason would be a kink shamer. This is.
I know.
Wow.
But I just think he just was really into his wife's feet, and that was it. And he was like, "Why not?"
Was that a big thing with Jets fans though? Did people like? Talk
oh,
about
yeah.
it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who did the press conference from the Pats? Was it Wes Welker?
Wes Welker.
Where he
best
dropped
foot
like
forward.
30 foot references. He's like, we got to take it 1 foot at a time.
You're going to put 1 foot in front of the other.
He used that one. That was right there at the start of the presser. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've run the gamut here. Yeah. Gary is, Gary's close to blowing his top here. He's upset. But he's gone.
I don't blame him.
He's gone bad. Bridge
after,
traffic.
After Dom made that chewing sound.
Oh, no. He's still on the bridge traffic.
Okay.
He says he has to leave 30 minutes earlier than he should have. That's tough.
Well, Gary, we told you to leave earlier. If you leave a little more time on your commute, maybe you won't be late.
Coming up in the break, maybe we'll have some traffic updates. Who knows? Who's to say? We don't know what happens here. It's the Halford Brough Show. Sportsnet 650.
I mean, the guy is, he is who he is. And he does a great job of making sure everybody's on the same page. And everybody's putting their best foot forward. You can't just stick your toe in the water, especially, you know, you got your foot up in the air. When to go out there and just put your best foot forward. He's got great feet. You know, he has good feet. He's another guy who has great feet. You want to make sure that, you know, you're putting your best foot forward out there. So let's go out there and being good little foot soldiers. You definitely have to be on your toes and make sure that you're ready to go.
You're listening to the Best of the Day.